Hi there, this is Danielle from the Gels Curator, and this is episode 24 of Art for Your Ear. Thanks again to Saatchi Art for supporting this episode. Saatchi is the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Today is pretty special for me because I'm talking to Jessica Bell. She is a talented mixed media artist and a dear friend of mine. She was missing for 2 years. Well, okay, she was actually away doing her MFA, but she's back, and I'm so excited to catch up with her. Jessica has made a huge impact on me as an artist, and you guessed it, we're going to talk about that. In fact, we talked about so much that after we quote-unquote hung up, I kept recording for about another 10 minutes or so. So you can hit stop when it seems like we're done, or you can keep on listening. There is mention of gin, chips, and Conan O'Brien if that entices you. Okay, let's get on with this and call Jessica in Vancouver. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Danielle.
I'm so excited to hear your voice.
Likewise.
It's been way, way, way too long.
Yeah, I think 2.5 years since the last time we spoke.
Well, the last time I saw you, you were on an epic road trip across Canada from Vancouver to Ottawa to start your MFA.
That's right. I was not road weary quite yet.
No, you'd only done one leg. And so we went for a beautiful lunch overlooking a vineyard. And then I made your car stall out when I made you do that U-ey to go back and get that old landscape that someone had left out on their lawn.
I just thought of that the other day, you know? I did. I just thought of that the other day because I hardly drove my car the entire time I was in Ottawa because I could never figure out where I was. So I walked almost everywhere, but that was one of the last times I drove my car.
Oh my God, that's so funny. And you're about to go on this road trip and I'm making you stall out because I'm like, look, it was free. We just took it off somebody's lawn.
It was at the end of the driveway.
Yeah.
So it was asking to be taken.
Yeah, there was no free sign on it, but I just felt like it was insinuated.
That was understood by me
okay,
as well.
Good. Hopefully those people aren't looking for their painting. Who knows? Yes.
That's what you get for leaving paintings by the side of the road.
I know. So, okay, there's lots of stuff to ask you. I want to talk to you about your MFA. You are nominated for a big fancy Canadian painting prize right now, so we're going to talk about that. But I also want to kind of talk about how we met and the fact that you don't know this yet, but you and one Miss Sarah G. Miller are featured in my new book.
Really?
Yes, because I tell the story of that amazing afternoon that I had with you guys.
At the show at my house?
At your house. Oh. So I want to talk about that because that was like pivotal for me. And I want other people to hear that and maybe they'll go have a pivotal chocolate coffee filled afternoon too.
Okay.
So we're going to rewind to, do you remember when we met?
Yes.
When?
I remember when the first time I actually met you, you came to a show that I believe... Oh, I think this is the first time I recall speaking to you because I'd known who you were and I was afraid of you.
What? I am super mean.
I knew you from online and I knew the things that you'd done and I was intimidated by your success and your courage in saying whatever you thought online. And I believe you came to the open, to a show that I opened with Erin Moran and Sarah G. Miller, which was called Monumental, which opened in Vancouver. And
that's
right. It was 2011.
Yeah. Was that the first time we met? That's not the story I have.
Oh.
But maybe I'm getting it mixed up with meeting Sarah.
Okay. Tell me when you think we first met.
I thought we first met at that Submit Tea art show.
Oh, you're totally you may be right. I just have got the order wrong in my brain.
And I was totally intimidated by you and Sarah. Because you're both super mean. Because before I was the Gels curator and I was really, really wanting to be an artist in Vancouver, I'd go to all the shows and I'd, you know, see all the stuff. And wherever I went, there was Jessica Bell and Sarah G. And I was just like, man. Yeah, I was so jealous of you guys. I just thought you just seemed to be everywhere. I never actually met you, but I just see your work everywhere, and I loved your work so much. And I just thought, wow, those women have it made, and they're probably super scary and mean. And then I was at Submit Tea with Ben Skinner, another Vancouver great, and he said, oh, this is going to be really funny, because he said, I know that Sarah and Jessica both really like the Jell's Curator. And he goes, but at that time I was anonymous, so nobody ever, I was never really out and about.
You didn't know it was you.
No. And so he said, oh, this is going to be really funny. So he introduced me. He's like, oh, this is Danielle. Oh, hi. And it went on and on and on. And then he finally said, oh, and she's the Jell's Curator. And I'm not sure if you were standing there, but Sarah was like, her mouth just dropped open. And her husband, Tim, was like talking to somebody else like a few feet away. And she just starts going, she's staring at me. She just goes, Tim, 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 Tim. She just points at me. That's the Jell's Curator. And it was so funny. And then I met you, and you guys are just so sweet. And I remember thinking, wow, for years I had thought you guys would be the most intimidating people around. And you were like literally the nicest women I'd ever met. And so that leads to, so our relationship had always sort of been that, you know, you guys were artists and I was the Jell's Curator. And I don't even know if you guys really knew that I made art. Like, I was pretty quiet about that. And I got asked to do a little show in Seattle at my friend's gallery.
Right.
And they said 18 new pieces they wanted. And I was thrilled and honored and then completely freaked out.
I remember this.
And I didn't know what to do. Like, I just felt like a deer in headlights, and I should have been enjoying it and excited, but I was panicking. And so a friend of mine, Kathleen Shannon, she has an amazing, I'm gonna pimp out her podcast. She has an amazing podcast called Being Boss. Everyone should go listen to that. Huh. Anyway, she's not an artist, but she said, I was telling her about my freak out, and she said, don't you have any art friends you can talk to? Like, talk to people about my art? Yeah, no, thank you. No. And then I thought, well, who do I know that knows about art and that is nice? And so I called you and Sarah, and I said, can I bring you chocolate?
I remember this.
Yeah, it was the, and then I just said it all. I just put it all out there. And you guys were, I think I was there for like 4 or 5 hours.
We had a great afternoon. We sat on my balcony. I remember. It was a nice day.
It was so amazing. And you guys were so, I mean, you didn't, you know, blow sunshine up my ass or anything, but you were, you know, like, because sometimes
we
you worry.
Didn't.
No, but sometimes you worry, you know, that you finally open up to people, and they just are so sweet because they just don't want to be mean. Like, that's what my inner critic is telling me, right? Like, oh, they don't really mean it. But you guys gave amazing, really constructive criticism and great feedback and great advice. And I left there. It literally was like a pivot moment.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I don't think you guys had any idea how important that was to me, but that was a really big deal. And so I wrote that story in the new book. And it's in a chapter about sharing, because I just, you know, I think so many people are intimidated to show their work and share their work and talk to their work about people. And the key is finding trusted sources, not just anybody,
right.
Not just social media, but trusted sources. And you and Sarah were that for me. And I have never told you that. And I just really wanted to tell you that.
Oh, thank you. It's so wonderful to know. It's funny the way that we think that people see us in the world is always so different than the way that people actually see us in the world. And that's one of the, I don't know, I think of that as one of the privileges of getting older, is realizing that there's, the way we're seeing, getting to see yourself the way that people see you, and not just the way you see yourself.
Yeah, that is. You're right. That totally comes with age and experience. And you hear the same thing enough times, you start to buy it. I think you actually said that in Creative Block about how do you feel about being called an artist? And you said, well, I don't know if I believe it, but people keep telling me, so I'm going to just roll with that.
I say that I am, because, yeah, no, it's true. And I mean, I think, it's funny with time, and I think with saying it, I'm trying to think now how a couple of years since Creative Block has come out, or since we first talked about that, that I maybe say that with more ease than I used to.
Well, yeah, that
with
was
more
pre,
practice.
That was pre-MFA.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And that, you know, like that, that's okay. So let's lead right into that. I think this is right. You're a self-taught, you didn't do a BFA, right?
No, I didn't. What, I have my BA is in art history. I have an honors degree in art history.
And then, so, cause when I first met you and knew you, you were doing, all sorts of things, but you were completely self-taught, but having a huge amount of success.
I had, my work was welcomed in lots of places. I definitely had an audience for it for sure.
And you were doing sort of mixed media painting, really.
Yeah, that's kind of what I kept coming back to over and over again, for sure. Mixed media painting and then some work with fiber and collage and kind of just integrating all sorts of materials at once. In general, like the one in the two-dimensional field, like something flat, like a two-dimensional surface, yeah.
And when did you start doing that? Like after you finished your BA or?
No, it's funny. Life is funny. When I went to do my undergrad, I thought I was going to do studio. I actually went in to my undergraduate work thinking that I would declare a studio major. And when I got there, two things happened. The first thing was that I couldn't pick an area of specialty. I couldn't commit entirely to claiming painting as my field or drawing or sculpture or photo, but I wanted to do a little bit of all of it. And the second thing that happened was I just fell in love with art history. I felt so at home in art history. My focus area was in the history of architecture, which I've always loved. And I don't know, within art history, I see so many things converging and all of them are kind of trying to build a picture of the world. So I ultimately couldn't commit to a specific studio field, but I did commit to art history. And so I followed that through and then did studio electives, whichever ones I could get into as my options.
Oh, okay. And so when you graduated then, what happened?
When I graduated, two things happened. One thing was that I met this guy who I married.
Oh, those guys.
Those guys. I met this really nice man who I married and I'm still married to. And the second, so life became a bit different and I had this nagging, this kind of nagging will to continue making things, but it kind of went on the back burner as I tried to pay off student loan debt and dealt with some things in our family that happened that were just life things. And then this nice guy that I married got the opportunity. We were living in Calgary at the time in Alberta. He got a job offer in BC, in Vancouver. And so we went out on a limb and we moved here. And in a way, it felt like, not like starting over, because it's not like I needed things to stop the way they were exactly, but I was in a certain kind of city and I had a certain kind of life. And when I got to Vancouver, which is a very different city, which has a really different culture and enabled a different kind of life, it was kind of like this permissive place that I could all of a sudden do what I'd been wanting to do even since I went into my undergrad, that I could possibly set aside the space to make the things I want to make or at least try. And what happened specifically was something seemingly insignificant, which made all the difference, was I met an artist who's much more advanced than me in her career. And I met her at a Vancouver Arts and Culture event, and within the studio building that she worked in, a small space came up, and it was less than 100 square feet. And it was within this giant warehouse in Vancouver.
Was it Parker Street?
It wasn't Parker Street, but it was down the street from there on Vernon Drive.
Okay.
In a building called the Old Foundry Building, which is exactly what it sounds like. In the Old Foundry Building, there is no insulation and no heat because there's no insulation to keep it in. Oh, and within the Old Foundry Building, there was this little cube of space on the first floor that didn't even have a roof. All it had was a tarp over.
Oh my.
It's like a few walls and a tarp over it to keep the heat in. But this little studio space was $119 a month. The opportunity presented itself, and on just impulsively, I took it. And I remember I moved in at the end of November, which was the coldest, wettest time in Vancouver. And I wore my winter snowshoe boots in there the entire, until about April, I think, because the concrete floor was so cold. But I set up shop there and I went every single day. I basically told myself, it's like, for 6 months, I'm going to try and see if I can manage this. And I'm going to see what happens. And then I can give myself an out, you know, I can let go of the place or try and find another job. And I just never did it. I actually kept working. And that was, I guess, I think that was in 2007. No, 2000. Yeah, it was in 2007, at the tail end of 2007. And so after that, I just kind of put my head down and worked, and was in the fortunate position of being surrounded by really interesting artists, like this artist who I worked alongside, Heather Craig, and eventually people like Sarah G. Miller and so many others that are kind of in that area that just kind of became my instant community.
And do you think it was because you were in that space?
I think it was because it was partially because I was in that space, but it was also just, I think, more so because I made the decision that when I made the decision to basically focus on making work, even for that initial 6 months, it's all like all of my senses got attuned to other things. And, Heather Craig, the artist who still is working in that studio that I, in that building that I initially kind of was working downstairs with, I remember her saying to me really early on when we barely knew each other, and we'd eat at lunch together every day. And she would get a single apple and cut the apple piece by piece and sit there, and we'd look at her paintings in process and we'd talk about them. And inevitably we would talk about the paintings and we'd talk about life and politics and all sorts of things. Like there was just no, everything kind of intermingled. And I remember her saying to me really early on, Jessica, you can't make art in the cracks. And what she meant by that was that I needed to have a clear and open space to try and make art. That it's actually, if you're trying, if it's the thing that you're trying to fit in kind of at the end, then it's a really hard thing to get towards. And so I think of it as that time where I cleared the slate and then things just started to present themselves, including people.
That's amazing. That gives me chills.
Yes, it was. It stuck with me as being one of these pivotal moments where I recognized in her saying that, it's like she was right.
And I mean, you had already sort of started down that path, right? Like claiming those 6 months, like that's a big deal.
It was a huge deal. It was terrifying at that time, to be honest. I mean, you know, Vancouver is not the most affordable city in the world. It's
it's actually one of the most expensive cities in
the world. It is. Yeah. And to say, I mean, some credit goes to that, to my partner too, Ian, who basically said, do it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's pretty important too, is having a partner that supports you.
Absolutely. I've benefited from that enormously. I mean, and in the decision to go to grad school too, because we went together.
Yeah.
He put aside his career and said, okay, you're going to do this? I'll come with you. And he left his job in Vancouver and we went together out to Ottawa so I could study for 2 years.
Wow. That is a perfect segue because that's what I wanted to ask you about next. So going to do your MFA without a BFA, did you have any insecurity about that? Or were you like, you'd been making and been in studio life for long enough that you felt confident?
I had a huge insecurity about that.
Really?
I did. I had, because it's an unusual thing to do an MFA, and also coming from Vancouver, the assumption was that I had a BFA from Emily Carr, which is a great art school, and I had to say, actually, no, I didn't go to Emily Carr, and no, I don't have a BFA. So,
did people care?
There was, I don't think people cared. I mean, because ultimately within grad school, one of the great experiences that I had was that ultimately people look at you based on the work you're making and what you say about it. Mm-hmm. That's what you're being measured by. And so while I think that was initially met with surprise and the insecurity was more on my end than on others, I don't think it was as big a deal to other people as it was to me. In the end, it was like this massive bonus. I will admit, and I've said this, is that all this, like since doing my BFA, my BA, once getting to grad school, I had the thought, once I was doing a studio MFA, that I said, wow, I got at this the wrong way, right? In my head, I thought I should have done a BFA. I have a lot to make up for when I'm in grad school, but the art history degree, kind of the thinking that's embedded in that and the knowledge of history and all of this resource to pull from, and just the different way that you make sense of the world with that kind of lens ended up being this massive asset to me. It actually was probably the biggest asset to me going in, and also what I didn't have. I think that sometimes art education, it can serve as a burden. Mm-hmm. It can be this list of things and experience that you're trying to overcome or compensate for. It becomes this tape that plays in your head of things you should or shouldn't do. And because I didn't have a studio BFA, I bypassed a bunch of that input at the undergraduate level, which probably some things it definitely made easier for me. I think it made me braver in a lot of ways, to be honest, in terms of what I tried, because I didn't have that same experience of I'd never had a formal crit until a grad school crit.
And how did you like that?
Oh, let me tell you. It was wonderful. I mean, it's a hard thing, right? They're not designed to be easy for sure. And at the University of Ottawa, part of the reason I chose to go there was because they're, you know, a really strong faculty, and a lot of the external evaluators that were invited in for your midterm and your departmental crits at the end of each term. So 6 semesters I had in my grad school, these external evaluators were former curators and from the National Gallery Canada, current contemporary art curators from the National Gallery Canada, people from the other public art galleries like Ottawa Art Gallery.
Did that freak you out?
Sure.
That would have freaked me out.
It did. And at the same time, it was this massive opportunity because these are people that look at art in the world all the time. They are looking at, their resource pool is so huge. So when they tell you, hey, you should look at this person's work, it's because they've seen it and they're looking at it and they've got so much to pull from. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's massively intimidating. It got to be less so towards the end, because you get familiar with the protocol of how this all works. And I mean, ultimately, I think on the other side of this, and my thesis advisor told me this is a lot, it's like in a crit, what we're asking you for is we're looking at your work and we're listening to what you say about it. And we're looking for holes to see where it doesn't match up, right? Where the two things don't align together. And I can see that towards the end, that those things, that what my work and what I was saying about it got closer and closer together. So It also got less scary. Yeah.
So let's talk about that, because your work, and I mean, granted, you haven't really posted, you haven't shown much of the stuff really that you were doing at school, right?
Well, intentionally? I didn't for a while. I've put some stuff up now.
Oh, okay.
It's on my website. It's, I finally got a hold of jessicabell.ca.
Yay.
There's so many Jessica Bells in the world. I've been lying in wait, waiting for somebody to give up theirs. But I finally, on that site, there's actually kind of a field of images that are a lot of recent work.
Oh, okay.
Some is from my thesis exhibit, which was at the Ottawa Art Gallery, and some is from my studio. Okay. But it's kind of this kind of little wandering path of images to see, to kind of show how work links one piece to another.
Oh, cool. Well, every time I do a podcast, I also do a post where I'll put links and show the work that we talked about. So I'll go and grab some. So do you feel like your work changed drastically over those 2 years or no?
I feel like...
Or evolved, or...
It definitely, yeah, I think it grew. I think the way I think about doing an MFA, or the way I did it, was that I went in with a strong studio practice. I'd never really struggled with making work. So I went in kind of having a good idea of my working method. And I think of what I did in my MFA is basically taking everything apart, taking apart my thinking and the decisions I was making as much as I could to see what the essential things were, and then kind of putting it back together again. And so those initial things that I was interested in are still there, but they've grown in ways I didn't actually see coming, but when I look back, make a lot of sense. Like I can see it. It's funny. I just opened a show in Vancouver here last week, and a lot of the work that's in it was from my thesis show. And so having been away from Vancouver for 2.5 years, a lot of people who I haven't seen in that time came to my show, and a lot of people hadn't seen the work. And the comment overall was that they didn't see this coming, but they can see it within the kind of the lineage of what I've done is that they couldn't have predicted it, but they can connect it to what came before. And that was satisfying, because I can see that too. I didn't get rebuilt into something completely different. I think I refined my interests, and I think I got more brave, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
That's the advantage of being challenged on your thinking and in what you do in the master's. When you're up against a bunch of people who really know what they're talking about, and you have to answer for yourself. and if you still want to do something crazy, it's because you feel confident in that craziness at that point. You feel confident in saying, no, but this is why I did this, and this is why I'm not going to apologize for it.
Oh, that's awesome.
So...
I would have liked to watch that.
You wouldn't have wanted to watch all of them. There was a few really bad ones in my first year where I just thought, why am I doing this? Like, this is an impossible task. But at the end of it, like, I got a lot out of the experience. I really did.
Well, one thing that's kind of neat to bookend it in a way is the fancy prize that I was talking about.
I know. Isn't it crazy?
It's so cool.
Right, because when I saw you 2.5 years ago, I was heading to Ottawa where they were giving out the RBC Prize in 2013, and I had been nominated for the Western region of Canada, and they were giving it out in Ottawa where I happened to go to school. And then at the end of my degree, I've been nominated again for 2015, and they're giving out the prize here in Vancouver.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
It's this kind of funny loop. Everything, yeah,
wow.
It's been like brackets on the end of this kind of period of study.
Yeah, and the two pieces are very different, I think.
Yes, I guess they are.
I mean, you're right. I know what you mean. Like, you can see it. You can see the connection.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they're very different. And what I think, okay, we have to point out, we have to tell people about this prize because, yes, she was nominated. Only 15 artists in Canada are the finalists. There's 5 from the East, 5 from Central, and 5 from the West. And to be nominated for that twice, like,
it's
slow golf clap, like, that it's just crazy. And so when is the big announcement and
the all the stuff?
Yeah,
it's
November.
The announcement's November 18th.
And are they doing it at the Vancouver Art Gallery?
It's at the Contemporary Art Gallery.
Oh, cool.
And the show will be up for a couple of weeks, I believe. It's November 13th to 29th. It's where all the paintings will be exhibited. And actually right now in Toronto at Art Toronto, which is one of the contemporary art fairs in Canada, the paintings are being exhibited for the first time, starting tonight, actually.
Oh, all together in one space?
All together in one space. So they kind of tour around, and then this time it'll be juried here in Vancouver at the Contemporary Art Gallery.
And you'll be able to be there, which is so great.
And I will be there. I will be there.
And it is so, what is the grand prize?
The winner gets $25,000, and their work goes into the RBC collection, which is a really significant collection of Canadian art.
That is just amazing.
It is. And the runners up, there's two runners up, which each get $15,000, and their work also goes into the collection. And then, but everyone who's nominated does get some prize money, which is, honestly, it's one of these things that to be nominated is out of the number of exceptional painters and artists and thinkers that are in Canada is like, it's the prize.
Yeah, I know. It's an honor being nominated. And the fact, though, I just love how financially supportive they are to everybody. You know, it's not just like the grant. It's not just like the winner gets money and it's like, thanks everybody else for showing up. But not only do you get the notoriety of being nominated.
Right.
But everybody gets money, which then maybe you get a roof instead of a tarp.
It's true. Everyone gets some support for their studio practice. But they also, the other great thing about it is that it's, what I admire about the competition is that they're very community oriented. And once you've been a finalist, like, you're in the family, right? And so they kind of cultivate this in nice ways. Like, when we're in Vancouver this time, there's, you know, three days of activities where everybody is together, and you stay together at a hotel, and there are dinners and a symposium with accomplished artists who are on the jury, and professionals from the art field who give educational talks. And it's like, there's tons of information available. You get to meet a lot of really interesting people, and you get to be connected to each other. I mean, some of the artists that I met when I was in the competition in 2013 are really good friends now.
Oh, that's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I mean, if you win, great, but yeah, you're right. Like, this is just such an amazing thing. So I'm so proud of you. And, I realize I haven't seen you since I made you do that Yui, but, I think about you all the time. And, you know, like I said, I popped you in the book because, you know, I do. I think you're just such a force to be reckoned with, but just probably one of the sweetest people in the whole world. The last thing we're going to do is the speed round.
Okay.
Now, I do this at the end of every podcast. Okay. I call it the speed round. Nobody's ever fast, ever. So don't feel a ton of pressure, but they're pretty easy questions, I think.
Okay. Oh no. Okay. I'm not a very fast mover, but I'm going to do my best.
Okay. Speed round. Mm-hmm. I only have like three things for you.
Okay.
This might hurt some friends' feelings, but Vancouver or Ottawa?
Oh, both. And
I knew you were going to say that. All right.
You're waiting for me to give a different answer.
I know. I was like, no. I thought you were going to be like, I've got one. No, okay, fine.
I've learned diplomacy and while living in the capital.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. Painting or sculpture?
Painting.
Oh, okay. True. This is the last one. True or false? You made me the most beautiful wall hanging ever. Is that true or false?
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's not fair. I made you a...
Meh. The correct answer is true. So everybody listening,
well,
Jessica was making...
It's cotton.
Oh, it's cotton. Oh, yeah, because I'm allergic to wool.
That's right.
So I can rub up against it. So you were making these smaller pieces of... Is it crochet? Or knitting?
Those are knit, yeah.
Knit. Okay. And I love them so much. And I think it was right before you moved.
True, yeah.
Yeah. And you were like, I'm going to send you a little something. So I was like, oh my God. And I was thinking it was going to be like a 12-inch by 12-inch, you know, whatever. So I get the post office notice. So I go to the post office. And there is this huge, heavy box from Jessica Bell. And I'm like, what the hell did she send me? So I take it home. I open it up. And I actually cried. It is huge, beautiful. It's in our living room. It's so, so amazing. I'm going to put a picture of it on the site. It is one of my prized possessions. It's amazing. And didn't you have carpal tunnel when you made it?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes, I did. Well, this is to be a stubborn knitter, like to be a fanatical knitter, which I am in phases, in fits and spurts. Usually determined by my carpal tunnel. It's a vicious cycle, the compulsive knitting and the carpal tunnel. So,
leads to the next. Well, anyway, it is so, so beautiful. And I threw that into the speed round just so that I could show that piece on the post. Oh. Really was my only reason for doing that. That's it. We're all done. I'm so happy that we got to do this. It was just such a thrill. And in the RBC prize, people said, is there anybody that you'd like to interview? I said, yes, please, Jessica Bell. I could not wait to hear your voice and hear everything that you've been up to. And I'm so excited for you. And I'll be paying attention on November 18th.
Thank you.
And next time I'm in Vancouver, I'm coming to see you.
Please do.
Yay.
I won't tell you my address now.
Yeah, that's right.
But I'll let you know.
Okay, deal. Okay, well, enjoy Vancouver, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
I am so happy to hear you. I went out for coffee. I was in Vancouver, and I was doing a whole bunch of meetings. I was there to do the speaking thing and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't really tell anybody I was coming because I was just so busy. Yeah. And then I actually had a morning to myself. I wasn't flying out till 3 or something. So a friend dropped me off at a coffee shop that I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm like 4 blocks from Sarah's house.
Oh.
And so I just sent her an email. I'm like, hey, I'm sitting at Matchbox. Is that what it's called? And I was like,
Matchbox,
I think.
Coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, is that near you? And she wrote back. Like 10 seconds later, she's like, yes, I'm getting out of my pajamas. I'll see you in 15 minutes. Oh. And she came over and we had like a 2-hour coffee date. And it was so great. And we talked all about you and we were wishing that you were sitting there with us. And we talked and talked. And I showed her a bunch of new collages that I haven't shown anyone.
Really?
I pulled them up. I had my computer because I was writing. And so I pulled them up and she loved them, which was very, very sweet. And then I left and I said... I emailed her and I was like, it's really nice that you said you like them, but do you have any actual feedback for me? Because I would never normally do that kind of a follow-up. If somebody said it was nice, good. Let's leave it with that. I don't want to hear any more. But I just felt like between the two of you, I just trust you so much. And so she came back and she said, well, I love them. I think they're beautiful, blah, blah, blah. She said, but I wish they meant something, because they're just these random little fun misfit, I call them, these misfit collages, but they're very narrative.
Right.
And they're just weird and funny and quite humor-based. But she's like, I wish there was intention.
Huh.
And I was like, that is excellent feedback, Sarah G. Miller. And it didn't hurt my feelings at all, because it was delivered in a kind way and it was bang on.
And that's what you wanted, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted. And so now I've been working on them. I haven't shown them to anybody again yet, but like, I think I'm going to start selling them.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I just, I wish so much that you were there for that same conversation, just, you know.
But anyway. I missed so many good conversations. I mean, I think I had a lot of good ones in grad school too, but.
Oh, I'm sure. But now you're back, and now you're going to have a whole new set of conversations.
Yeah, I know. All sorts of new ones. I'm interested to know what you what you think about the new work too.
I went and looked a while ago, because I was asking Sarah about it, and she said, honestly, I don't know that much, because she said she's decided not to really post anything till she's closer to the end. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I haven't really gone back to look.
Yeah. If you look now, well, in the end, I started making, lots of the paintings for my thesis show were inflatable.
No.
Yes.
Inflatable. Yes, what? Yes, what did you make them out of?
They're full of air. Oh, they're. But no, I got obsessed with this idea in grad school, the idea of making kind of perpetually flexible, changeful paintings. So
that's essentially you're so smart.
Well, I don't know. It seemed like this kind of inevitable problem I had to solve, or this inevitable thing I wanted to address, is that a painting should be as flexible as we're meant to be, like in a human way. So that's my thesis work sort of ended up being like that.
And so is this what's in the show right now?
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, and where is that?
Initial gallery on Granville Street.
Okay.
And then there's some at Feature Contemporary Art Fair now in Toronto, and there will be some more. I'm just finishing some to take with me to Ottawa to install at another show that opens on the 30th of October.
You go, girl.
Yeah, it's been this kind of giddily busy time in a way.
So awesome. I'm so proud of you. And that totally sounds condescending and ridiculous, but that's not what I mean.
I know exactly the place that you mean it from. And yeah, I kind of, you know what the best part is to get like, just to get, have an excuse to keep making work. Which is kind of all I ever really wanted, was that I want a good, solid excuse to keep doing the things that I want to do. And then I guess to have the guts to do them. And that's kind of happening at the moment, which is great.
I think you've always had the guts, obviously.
I think I got some more guts.
Yeah.
I definitely got some more. I mean, while I was in... I got tougher skin for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I did. I did get that. I mean, an MFA is, I don't know. It's funny because I've heard from a lot of people. It's like, oh, really? You're different. And I think I am. I'm maybe a bit more, I don't know. I think I'm also tired probably right now from after the fact, and that, kind of getting the experience of it and the rigor and pace of it, which is kind of not really human, out of your system. After that, I'll bounce back.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see like what the next year brings.
Yeah, you know, for me too.
Yeah, yeah. I think you'll just happens. Yeah, just to settle. Like you know, you're back in Vancouver, which you probably couldn't have predicted, and then just like settling back in, and how you're going to change, and how your work is going to change, and and evolve, and you know, it'll just be really, really interesting.
Yeah, I'm kind of, I'm expecting to be surprised because I think that's one thing that when things are going well for me and what I'm making is that there's this kind of continual state of surprise over what develops if I'm paying enough attention to it. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping that that'll continue, right? And to figure out like a new way of working. I figured out a new way when I was in grad school of, you know, getting things done and now post grad school, what that'll be like.
Well, you can have a nap first if you want.
It'll take you up on that.
You have a little nice, little cozy, rainy Vancouver winter.
I know, with gin.
With gin.
We're there not you. Still on, are we? Okay.
I am. I'm going to keep all of this, actually.
You probably should.
I am totally going to. I'm going to just add it in as a little extra bonus with Jessica Bell.
With gin. With I should gin. Have said that was my best present ever.
Gin. Just gin. A bottle of gin.
Gin.
Well, one of my favorite quotes of yours, and I use it in all my talks when I do creative block talks, is about... I have a slide about criticism, and I said my favorite quote from the book is Jessica Bell saying, you know, if it comes from a trusted source, that's one thing, but if it doesn't, I can usually just eat a bag of chips and sleep it off.
It's still true.
I know, I love it. And maybe that's because I have an insane love of chips, but that has always stuck with me, and I, you know, it's true. You have to think about where that criticism's coming from. And like in your crits, like if it was coming from curators and, you know, people that you were like, wow, that you really trusted their experience and their opinion, that's certainly one thing. Getting slammed by some art nerd just so that they can say something mean is completely another.
I would say so. I will admit to having eaten a lot of chips in school. Like, wow. And I think at one point I was joking about how I just needed to, like, at one point before I graduated, before I finished my thesis and my thesis exhibition, my written thesis, I was just like, if I get through this, I'm going to have to issue, like, in the beginning of my thesis, in my acknowledgements, it's like, I would like to thank
Old Dutch,
Ms. Vicky's, <Yeah. laughs> Conan O'Brien, and Jin. Thank you.
Mic drop. Oh my god, I'm so leaving this in.
If Conan calls me because of it, I'm gonna be so happy.
Yeah. Conan, I'm sure he listens to this podcast. I'm Conan, sure. If you're listening, call Jessica. You can find her at jessicabell.ca. She got it.
Andy Richter too. I want them both.
I'm waiting for Jimmy Fallon to call, but he hasn't yet.
Oh, I know.
One day.
It's late night. They're busy.
Okay, now I'm really going to hang up.
Okay.
Oh, I loved that. My favorite part? You can't make art in the cracks. That made my heart speed up a tiny bit. Maybe that means it's finally time for me to clear some time and space and really make my art a priority. Who's with me? Maybe if we all do it together, it'll be easier. Thank you all so much for listening. I appreciate it more than I can say. If you like Art for Your Ear, I would be so grateful if you gave me a rating on iTunes. It helps spread the word and keeps me near the top of the list with amazing people like Elizabeth Gilbert. Thank you. All right, that's it for my pitch. I'll be back with more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.